Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. Today is the 26th of October, 2015, here in Japan, and today we're joined on the line from Houston, Texas, by Derek Broz of The Conscious Resistance at theconsciousresistance.com. He writes for a number of different publications, and you can find all of his work at derekbroz.contently.com, which, of course, will be linked up in the show notes. He's also the author of a new book, The Conscious Resistance: Reflections on Anarchy and Spirituality. Derek Broz, it's great to have you on the program today. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, James.
Excellent. Well, it's good to talk to you today because, of course, in the research for my recent episode of my podcast on Samuel Konkin and agorism, you were one of the few people who came up online as someone who's promoting this and talking about these ideas already. And that's, again, as I say, I think that's a bit of an historical injustice against Sam Konkin and his ideas because I think they're quite important. But it's good to see that you were out there well before me talking about this and trying to apply it to your life. So let's bring people on board with this conversation. I know there are going to be some people in the audience who haven't seen my recent or listened to my recent podcast. So let's start with the baseline, base level. What is agorism? And I know there's a lot of different ways to answer this. And Sam Konkin himself talked about the kind of problems of reducing this to a pithy definition. But let's talk about what agorism means to you.
Absolutely. So, I was really thankful and happy to see you covering this topic because I think that it's a really important strategy that hasn't been employed enough, even in those who are more aware of libertarian, American individualist, anarchist history and strategy. It seems to be extremely underemployed, even though many people are already practicing counter-economists without realizing it. So basically, the idea came from Konkin, basically seeing that instead of trying to vote out the state or to, you know, use violent means, and, you know, the phrase is neither bullets nor ballots, but instead of using those strategies, rather than working directly in the system or trying to attack it directly, we could compete with it by building something new. And this is where he comes up with the idea of counter-economics, doing activity that is essentially outside of the state's purview or that they, you know, consider undesirable. And so that would be termed black and gray markets. So specifically, I'd say agorism is just the strategy, the employment of that strategy towards creating an agora, you know, this open marketplace where people can do business and all different ways. There's really, as Konkin said, you know, there's no one path towards liberty. We have no idea what the agora is really going to look like, but this is the strategy to get there. And so you do that by working in the counter economy, building counter institutions to the state. Basically, I feel like you evaluate, and I think it's important to focus this locally, decentralized, because Konkin wrote in the strategy, you know, the steps towards statism, towards getting to the free place, that we would see pockets of agora start to be established around the country, around the state. And I think that we already see that happening with, and it's happening more and more with things like Bitcoin and other tools, peer-to-peer tools, as you talk a lot about. So, I mean, that's the basics of it, though, is, you know, it's a strategy to use to work towards building a new, more free society without having to work within the state or try to fight them directly, and instead focusing on solutions, localizing, decentralizing, and finding the need in the market. Okay, where is the state doing something, and find a way to do it better and to do it without force and without, you know, using theft, taxation.
Well, then let's talk about counter-economics. You brought up the idea there that that this is something that people are probably already engaged in, even if they don't know it. But if you talk about black and gray markets, people are automatically going to think about, you know, drug dealing and gun running and whatever, and things that some people probably have nothing to do with. And they're going to think, well, that's not what I'm interested in. I don't see what the point of that is. Let's talk a little bit about the counter-economy and what it really entails.
Okay, so yeah, two things, of course, to define, important things to define, are what the black and the gray market are. Because as you said, people, especially with, you know, black, it's got this sort of negative connotation to it. Black market, you're thinking like mobsters or something. But in line with the non-aggression principle, which most libertarians, you know, anarchist thinking people understand the idea of non-aggression, or even if you're not an anarchist, just understand the idea of not aggressing on another human being and you know, self-defense, things like that. So in line with that, black market and gray market activity wouldn't include murder or, you know, theft or these aggressive acts. That would, Konkin term those to be red market activity. So black market then would be things that the state considers to be illegal. So whether that's, you know, your local pot dealer or, you know, like you said, selling weapons without a license, you know, the black market for that, or prostitution, things that are, when you break them down at the base of it, it's just two individuals making an exchange, you know, some contract between individuals, and society sort of shuns that, but and it's termed as black market dangerous activity, but that is outside the state's purview. So there's that, and in gray market, this is where I think more people are practicing the gray market than they realize. For example, you know, if you pay somebody to cut your lawn, you pay some kid to mow your backyard or whatever, you're not signing a contract and going through regulations and licenses and things like that. You just say, okay, hey, I'm going to pay you $20, you know, to pay my lawn or whatever. You hire a babysitter and it's a certain amount of dollars per hour. That's gray market activity. And, you know, those things sound, and they are, can really mundane and not necessarily revolutionary in their own right. But what Konkin was sort of foreseeing, and this is before, you know, the things like the internet exploded and technologies like Bitcoin. So he sort of foresaw, though, that because he was really into science fiction as well, and saw that technology would help establish these agoras. And so every time you order food or do business through your phone and you're using an app and there's no government middleman there, you are participating in that gray market activity. Of course, taking it further away from the Fed, that is where I think you're like actually practicing agorism. But when you're sort of halfway there, it's when you're not necessarily paying the tax man, right? But when you can really get out of the state is when you either use silver to do your business, or Bitcoin, or barter, direct exchange, you know, gift economy, all these type of things that essentially, at least for those of us in the United States and everywhere else that's got a central bank, you're taking the hands out of the central banker's system and putting it into that counter economy. That is the counter economy. All action that is not going to be taxed or regulated by the state. So whatever that may be, that can be things nefarious as, yeah, drug dealing, gun running, prostitution, or it can be, you know, this under the table work that you do on the weekends. You know, a lot of people work as waiters and waitresses. That's counter economy. That's counter economic activity right there. And so that's just the first step. Now, I think the next step is once we have conscious agorists, you know, conscious counter-economists. So there's a lot of people out there doing it without realizing it, and it's not really doing it. They're not doing that to work towards the state. It's just something they do. Yeah, I like to get paid in cash. I don't get, you know, I have to pay taxes. Everybody understands that idea. So when you start doing that and actually practicing this and starting to create counter-economic institutions to compete with the state, then you're really pulling money away from there. And, you know, and I definitely have tried to practice putting this into action, because this is the reason I love the philosophy of agorism. Is it's not about theory. There's very little theory. Konkin wrote two books and there's a couple of pamphlets, but there's not much to say about it. The idea, you know, the reason there's three A's in agorism is anarchy, the self-rule, of course, self-governance, the agora, the marketplace, and action. It's all about action. It's about putting these ideas and principles into action. So when you're done theorizing about how to, you know, move past the state or build a better world, this is where you start taking those first steps. And I do believe that you don't even need to be an anarchist to be an agorist, to be a counter-economist. You know, you can still recognize that, hey, it benefits me to take money out of the Federal Reserve system. It benefits me to use silver. You know, people understand the value of precious metals and that's, you know, that's outside of their system. So if you conduct business in that way, you're taking power away from them, you know. And the more of us who do that, and as Konkin sort of foresaw, is that we would see these pockets start to grow and they would sort of start to interlock. And now there's a lot of great ideas that, you know, I could go on about, ideas like freedom cells that I've really been exploring the past few months, that I think combined with these ideas of agorism can start interlocking these various communities, both digitally and real world. And then you start having communities that can hopefully at some point become strong enough that the state would just basically decide, let's leave them alone. You know, it wouldn't be worth their time to come stop this peaceful living community of people who are doing business. Because the way I foresee it, and really what my goal is in the next 2 years I'm giving myself, is to work with those who are really interested in these ideas to get land and to basically create an agorist community and to find ways. You know, I think of all the different ways. I started a gardening business. It's completely agorist. I, you know, make money putting in gardens around the city, different types of gardens. It's me and a friend of mine. I said, hey, he's got a truck. Let's partner together. We started putting out ads. We create a Facebook page. People contact us. We agree what we're going to work on. We agree for the amount, and we do business. And I'm able to provide money for myself, help another friend out, give these people a garden and get them food going. And there's no reason to involve the government in that. And we tell people we accept Bitcoin, we accept silver, you know, we'll do Federal Reserve notes if you choose, but, you know, it's getting these ideas into practice where I don't need to sit there and get them to read the New Libertarian Manifesto necessarily. I do recommend it for those who are interested in, you know, the root of these ideas, but you don't necessarily need to get people to understand those concepts to get them to understand the value in taking their money away from Uncle Sam. And this idea of, well, look, hey, if we start creating a new economy, they wouldn't even be involved with it. And the way I see it is, for those who are choosing to build now, You know, I often tell people we have a couple of options. We can either sit still and just, you know, assume that the government's going to take care of it, right? And everything's going to be fine. And, you know, if things go bad, whether economic collapse or otherwise, we'll just go to the FEMA camps and they'll take care of us and that'll be great. Or we can wait and we can go loot and riot, you know, and try to survive that and do what we can to survive. Or we can build now. We can start building now. We can start pulling ourselves out of the you know, status, the Federal Reserve economy, investing in counter-economic activity. You know, I can give more concrete examples of that, absolutely. And just, you know, putting these ideas into practice in our own lives and encouraging them. And, you know, I think that's probably the most, for me, it's the most important strategy we have right now. I've been focusing and learning more and more about it the past couple of years and just trying to put it further into action and show people this is a real world strategy. This isn't something you just talk about. You know, you can only talk about agorism for so long before it's like, okay, now you got to put your money where your mouth is. You know, this strategy is one of action. So if you're still talking about it, it's like, there's a disconnect. So I think it's a beautiful strategy to really laying the groundwork towards a better future.
That's right. And I think it is important to point out that people are agorists already, whether they know it or not. They are participating in the counter economy. It's really a question of whether they're doing it consciously or unconsciously and towards a certain purpose or just randomly. And in that regard, I think, obviously, this is not something that requires technology in any way, shape, or form. I mean, someone just, you know, growing food and selling it to people for cash or whatever without involving the government, that is the counter-economy. It doesn't require any technology or anything. But I think if there is anything that the technological aspect adds to this, it's that it makes it easier for people to access that counter-economy. People can connect with a wider base and actually create viable businesses without involving steps that will get Uncle Sam in the middle. But also, I think it can help people foster the understanding of what this is and why they're doing it. When you see an agorist business taking off and making being successful, it starts to change people's perception of things. And one of the most mainstream examples of this is something like Uber, which what they're doing in city after city is, I suppose, technically illegal or doesn't follow those rules, but they just change the rules and a lot of people use it. People are like, this is amazing. This is wonderful. How come we haven't had this before? And suddenly, hey, there's new rules and the government pretty much has to concede to it or try to clamp down on it. But people have already tasted that freedom. To me, that's the hopeful part of the technological aspect of this, is that people are becoming sort of more aware of what this is about. But perhaps you can speak to that. Have you encountered that phenomenon in your own experience?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that in some ways, the digital revolution that is happening, it's coinciding with the growth of agorism. You know, like I said, Konkin's books came out before the internet even really exploded, but now we have things like Bitcoin, you mentioned Uber. We have these ride-sharing, peer-to-peer, all these different ways that technology is helping us connect. And to me, Facebook and social media is one of the easiest examples of just the ways people connect. And that isn't in itself counter-economic activity, but it's people breaking down these barriers that have been there for so long. And that's, to me, is the first step towards laying the groundwork towards that. Now, I want to say one thing as far as the limits of agorism, if I can, because one of the criticisms of agorism came from Murray Rothbard himself, and he talked about that basically you're only speaking to a small percentage of people, and we were kind of touching on this, that not everybody's going to be able to be involved in black, or even maybe have the desire to be involved in black market or gray market activity. So I really see agorism as a strategy that is going to be employed by a small group maybe in the beginning, but then as these ideas start to become embraced, that sort of dirty work will have been done already, and it'll be easier for those that are coming, you know, and in the future. Basically, once we have, I know several people right now, for example, who are working on apps, and we're sticking with the digital now, but working with apps that will allow people to use GPS to find any business person, craftsperson, you know, source of food in their radius, in their area, without having to go to, you know, the big grocery store, the big Walmarts or anything. And we have things like this with Etsy accounts, with all these things that people create on the internet. Now we're going to take apps and make it where you can find somebody, you know, within 5 miles of you, and you can decide what kind of currency you use with them or what kind of exchange. I mean, it's amazing. It's brilliant, and it's beautiful to see those things happening. That, I think, is going to make it easier where, again, the rough kind of like, oh, we're doing the early work. I personally am a tax resister as well as an agorist, and I think that's a big element of it. But not everybody wants to resist the taxes. Not everybody can afford to not pay their taxes. Not everybody can afford to take the risks that some of agorism involves as far as gray market and black market activity. And that is, if there's any fault, that could be a fault of it. But I feel like the other strategy that we touched on as well is the localized, decentralized, that everybody can do. You can all support your local farmers market, your local urban farm, or start one yourself or get involved. That's getting you off of that status system. You know, you start with food, which is so important. As I said earlier, we can wait till things collapse and either ask for government help or go loot and riot. But we also have the opportunity to set up these communities and to set up these ideas and to create a framework that essentially some economic collapse or some catastrophe could come and we could be, you know, almost unaffected by it. And not only that, but could help others and go say, hey, here's some seeds, here's some, you know, some supplies, get yourself started for those of us who were already prepared, who are already building the framework. So it's definitely, this idea is being helped along by digital means, but it's also a very real world strategy that I think needs to be put into place. And again, if for those who want to look further into this, do a YouTube search for Freedom Cells, and you'll find an interview I did with John Bush, and you can hear more about that idea. I think those concepts that are these newly emerging concepts, which we're really just learning from the way, seeing the way that the internet works, where all these little, you know, these interlocking spheres are, it's really a beautiful thing just to see that happen. But please check that one out. And yeah, I think that this is the most important strategy for us to use and focus on right now. There's no hope in politics. And I mean, your audience knows that there's no hope in politics. And I don't see any realistic chance or desire for me personally to go take up arms against the government right now. Although I do feel like my freedom is being threatened. You know, you're outside of the country. I'm still here inside here. And it's getting a little crazier. And I think about those things, but I also have faith and hope in people and individuals choosing to take their lives in their own hands and being self-reliant, being empowered. And those are the kind of people that I want to work with. And I think that's what it's going to take, is those of us who are ready to kind of lay the groundwork and get your hands dirty out there and start deciding, you know what, like, if I don't support the Federal Reserve System, then how about I stop using their dollar? You know, and this is just an important part of the strategy, is examining all these areas of your life and the things that you say you are against or that you don't support. You know, if you're for freedom, but you're against the tyranny of the government, and you're against the, you know, corporate welfare, whatever it is, these issues you have, start examining your life and seeing the ways that you are supporting them, you know, because you can't really very well say you're against Monsanto if you're buying all their products, or, you know, and you can't really say you're against the government if you're still using their currency, if you're still supporting their system. So it's about being honest with, you know, the ways you're contributing to your own enslavement and being willing to start pulling yourself back out of that. And I think the answer towards pulling out of that and creating something new is agorism.
I think you gesture to another sort of leg on this stool that's important here, which is the idea of community. Because without community and that sense of purposeful community, I think this idea is not really impactful. It's not going to change anything. And I think that's part of the conscious agorism, is creating that community of like-minded people who understand what they're doing and the nature of it. I mean, and I think you're right. You don't have to participate in the counter economy in order to decentralize and localize and participate in these. You can pay with your Visa card and dutifully note everything to pay the proper sales tax if you want. Sure. I mean, I guess if you want to support the state that way. Yeah. Okay. But the important point is to get involved in those communities, to start supporting other people. And I think there's an interesting story to be told about the way community has shifted from the sort of human interaction of people in your neighborhood that used to be, or in your town or whatever, that used to be part of the core part of what it meant to be human. And then, of course, the breaking apart of that during the Industrial Revolution, the urbanization, moving people into boxes in cramped neighborhoods where nobody knows each other. And now we're trying to rediscover that, I think, through this technological process and trying to reconnect with human beings. And I think that is really the essence of what this freedom can actually bring about. Any other thoughts on community and the importance of that before we wrap this up?
You know, I think that that's a great point to make there. And you can be an individual agorist out there doing your own action, but you're a lot stronger with other people of like mind. And, I think that just starting to, with just reading the book, with spreading those ideas, but really just talking to people around you, that if you know people, other activists or other people who are just concerned in your community, and really trying to have honest discussions about, well, you know, if we're sick of these things, what are we going to do about it? You know, we both know we're not going to take up arms. We both don't believe in the political system anymore. What options does that leave us? You know, when I write articles and I tell people it's time to let go of the political system, or, you know, you talk about the political candidates and people say, well, what's the best option? What's the next best option? You know, if you don't like my candidate, then who are you going to vote for? We're stuck in this dichotomy to think that it's only voting or giving up, that there's no other option. So if you're not voting, then you're obviously not going to do anything. But that's false. We need to show people that there are other ways to build, better, more free, enriching, positive lives. And I think that starts again with localizing. It starts with localizing, working on yourself on the other level, the deeper level, making sure that you are as strong and, you know, empowered as you can be, so that you're not going to be manipulated by the state or by any outside influences. And then looking for other individuals who are on a similar path and coming together and deciding to put these ideas into action. Absolutely, the community. You know, I have been blessed to be a part of the Houston Freethinkers community for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's not specifically an Agorist community, but without a doubt, you know, those influences are there. We work a lot to be involved in the community, whether it's for urban farming or, you know, helping with local businesses raise money for good causes. Just there's different things you can do, but it's about, like you said, reestablishing these bonds with our communities, whether they're global or whether the ones that are closest to us. But absolutely, there's going to come a point where all the Facebook friends in the world and Twitter followers in the world won't help you in your local community, unless those people are based in your community. So at some point, you have to get involved locally. You have to take those steps, take the activism and the evolution offline and into the real world. And I think Agorism offers us a great tool to do that.
And on that note, for people who happen to physically be in the Houston area, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
If you go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com, there's a contact page. You know, if you're interested in getting involved with us, we have monthly meetings and events, documentary screenings, like I said, gardening, and all kinds of different things. We just try to keep it active and show people that there are people in the community trying to focus on solutions.
Excellent. Well, an idea definitely worth spreading. I'm glad you're doing so. Once again, you're writing for a lot of different publications, Ben Swan, Antimedia, Mint Press News, lots of other outlets. So once again, we'll include the link to derekbrose.contently.com, which has a link to all of your reports. But also, of course, theconsciousresistance.com, where, as I mentioned, you just released a new book, The Conscious Resistance, Reflections on Anarchy and Spirituality. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the time to do that. The book, first of all, it's free to download. Go to theconsciousresistance.com, look at the book tab, and you can download the PDF. If you like what you read, then you can order yourself a physical copy. But basically, it's the result of a couple years worth of conversations and essays with another journalist and friend of mine, John Vibes, who's based in Maryland, and both just realized that we had interest in voluntarism and anarchism, and also in ideas related to shamanism, and for me, a lot of Native American traditions. And just, you know, those conversations over time, they grew and grew, and we started to see some similarity between these varying ideas and anarchist schools of thought, and figured that there would be some interesting things to pull out of there. And the basis of the conscious resistance, you know, as a philosophy, as a strategy, is just, like I was touching on a moment ago, is that no matter what solutions we come up with for a better world, you know, what ideas we have that we think will create this, until we are, you know, right in our own selves, whatever that means to you as an individual, until we deal with our own insecurities, doubts, fears, you know, traumas, all these things, and learn to heal. And on, you know, this has to start as an individual process, of course, and we're ready to face those things, then I don't believe we're really going to be able to create a more free world. We may have, you know, these ideas of agorism and create, get past the state and create all this stuff, but if we're also still filled with a lot of ego and hurt and pain, then I think it's only a matter of time before we end up back in the same thing with people trying to enslave each other, trying to hurt each other, trying to rule over each other. So, you know, we cover a lot of ground in there. It's a short book, 100 pages, covers everything from agorism, the history of anarchy, gender roles, spirituality, psychedelics, shamanism. We also look at the second part of the book looks at the intersections of anarchist thought with Buddhism, with the Tao, with Islam, with Christianity, and I believe that's all there. But yeah, so it's covers a lot of material, and we just released it this past April at the Free Your Mind Conference in Philadelphia, and we've updated it a couple times since then, and we've realized that it's actually going to be the first in a trilogy of books. This one kind of covers the whole conscious resistance philosophy. The next one is going to be more of essays on specific aspects of the ideas we already explored. And then the third one, which I'm really more excited about, if I must say, is tentatively titled Agorism in the Modern Age. And it's basically going to be a how-to on how to start doing counter-economic activity, ways to exit the state, and ways to exit the matrix. So I'm really excited to that, because I have 5 years without paying taxes, and, you know, my journalism gets paid through Bitcoin and, you know, other means, and I try to pull my money out of that system as much as possible. And I've had some successes and some roadblocks, and I think I have some information to share on that. So I'm looking forward to working that. But if you're interested in that book, it's, like I said, you can download it for free.
That's excellent to hear. Walking the walk and teaching other people how to do it. Couldn't think of anything more important. And I think you're exactly right. It all boils down to consciousness at the end of the day, because we could set up an alternative system, but without a fundamental change in consciousness and our understanding, it's just going to go back to the same thing. So,
absolutely.
Yes, excellent. Well, important work. Again, I'll link all of this up in the show notes so people can check it out. Derek Burrows, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me on, James.